Good afternoon and welcome. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. Today, it's midday on the arts. Coming up, a conversation with the leadership of the Single Carrot Theater in Baltimore. After a dozen years presenting new and unusual work, they are leaving their home in Remington and recasting their mission in an effort to connect with various sectors of the community in new and intriguing ways. We'll also hear from theater critic J. Wynn Russick with her weekly theater review, a conversation about how to catch creation at Baltimore Center Stage. But we begin with a conversation about the profound influence of one artist on another. The acclaimed MacArthur Award-winning artist Joyce Scott is featured in a new exhibition at the Baltimore Museum of Art that juxtaposes her work with the work of her late mother, Elizabeth Talford Scott. They lived and worked together in Baltimore for more than 60 years. The exhibition is called Hitching Their Dreams to Untamed Stars. Joyce Scott joins me on the line from her home in West Baltimore. Our conversation was recorded last week, so we won't be able to take your calls and comments. Joyce, it's a pleasure to talk to you as always. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you, Tom?
I'm doing fine, thanks. As I want to say, I'm a mess, but I'm blessed. You know, it's all good.
So, well, that's okay, because I'm pooped but proud.
Yeah, there you go. I like yours better. Tell folks about your mom, Elizabeth Talford Scott.
Well, my mother's name was actually Elizabeth Caldwell Talford Scott. Caldwell was her maiden name, but that's like you have to have a lot of wind to get all of those words out. My mom was from Black Sauk, which is outside of Chester, South Carolina. She was born in 1916. A sharecropper picked cotton, came up to Baltimore during the Great Migration that a lot of African Americans did. I lived in Washington for a while and settled in Baltimore, telling me that she really wanted to go to Chicago. And I'm actually pretty glad she didn't, because the winters there are horrible. My mom did everything. She was a housekeeper, a chef, a nanny. She sold dinners in the community. She was a singer, a real rascal, and an artist, a quilt maker. She didn't really start doing her work profoundly until I got out of college, and I know you talked to Dr. Leslie King Ham and Lowry Sims. Other friends kept looking at that work and saying, her work, saying, that's the real thing. And also having the ability to help her exhibit it and write about it.
And her grandparents were enslaved.
Yes.
I mean, she is very closely connected to the horrible legacy of slavery in this country. Her grandparents were enslaved. Her parents were sharecroppers.
Yeah, and so was she.
Mm-hmm. And so she gets to Baltimore. I mean, she started quilting, I guess, as a young kid. I mean, and that
as
was...
As a child.
Yeah, that was part of the culture of... it was a necessity, wasn't it, for folks to be able to have things?
It was a fundamental necessity, because quilts cost a lot less money than blankets. And it was an aesthetic necessity, because people had to create. And they were always making something. I come from, both sides of my family were crafts. People in my mother's side, especially, were craftspeople. These were also people of depression. They just couldn't go out and buy a cup as easy as it was for them to make one.
Sure. And when she made her quilts, I mean, as you said, there's a time there where she wasn't really making them much anymore, but then she picked it back up by the time you were going to graduate school for art in 1971, you went to Mexico to pursue a master's degree, and that's
right.
Kind of when she picked it back up again. What do you think led her to revisit that art of hers at that time?
Well, I think partially is because I wasn't home.
Yeah.
And she had that time. But my mother never stopped making things. We had everything in my house was highly festooned. You know, I told you she was from the Depression day. So if a towel or a washcloth was torn or tattered, she just beaded it or embroidered it or did something. So she was always doing handwork. And, you know, the house was very, very actively festive with wallpapers and stuff. But I think that my also going to undergraduate school at MICA, at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and doing art all the time and talking to her about art made her start doing art again. So it was before I went to graduate school. I came back home from graduate school in 1970, and by that time, she really was making a lot of larger pieces, and we just kept working together.
And the techniques that she employed for quilt making were techniques that she learned at the hand of her mother and her grandmother and people.
And father.
And father.
And aunts and uncles, you name it, yeah.
And you know, you mentioned that you went to MICA. MICA has a very vigorous fiber arts program that many kids are involved in now. What do you think they're missing when it comes to the oral tradition and the handing down of the sagacity about how to make these objects and how to make these quilts? That's a different way of learning than yeah. going to art school and studying fiber arts.
Well, you know, I believe they are really always working to bring in all modalities of textile and fiber work. I can give you an example. I was volunteering with a group of quilters here in Baltimore, and so they were talking about wanting to do something, and I said, well, do you, and they're older ladies, and I said, well, have you thought about bringing a student in and letting, you know, them show you stuff? The Maryland Institute of Art has a real really good fiber department. And they said, well, no. I said, well, look, I'm going to hook you up, meaning I gave the president the phone number. And those quilt makers now work in a project at MICA in their fiber department. And they're older, and many of them were not school trained in fiber art. So they're bringing in exactly what you talk about. Mike also has a lot of visiting artists, including myself, and I come in and do crits. And they're pretty good at this. I actually believe the fiber department is a very, very strong department, and I've traveled around the country doing this in different schools and find that they have a very progressive department. I'm very proud of them and my alma mater in that regard.
My guest is Joyce Scott, the great artist who's got a show at the BMA that opened just a couple of days ago called Hitching Their Dreams to Untamed Stars. And it's a show that she shares with her mom, Elizabeth Scott. Joyce, can you point to a specific thing that is the sort of overriding influence, the overriding legacy that you carry on from your mom? You and your mom were very close. And I just wondered if there's a way of articulating a particular way that she has influenced you as a professional, as an artist.
Well, I know that it's much deeper than my being an artist. But since, you know, being an artist is like a foundation for me about what I do every day, it relates. I am an African-American woman, a round-the-way girl from Baltimore, Maryland, from Sandtown. I come from humble beginnings. Both my mother and father, I told you, were sharecroppers. They didn't read and write very well, and they worked very hard, more than 40 hours a week, their entire lives. And when I asked her, you know, about pursuing what I wanted to do, she just always said, never give up. And the tenacity and rascality, mm-hmm. those are the things that I've gotten from my mother, and the knowledge that my perseverance will get me where I want to go. I don't always know where I want to go, but I know that I have the wherewithal to get there. And I have that because of the hard work that comes specifically from my parents and you know, them being hard scrapple workers, but also from being an African-American and have experienced what it means to be an African-American woman, and a working-class woman in a city like Baltimore. And she gave me an appreciation for who I am, exactly who I am, authentically who I'm not. Not someone that I think I should be or want to be, but that person who I am and how that's enough. Now, I can extend who I am. You know, I can always evolve and be wonderful. But I'm one of those people who's really rooted in being a Baltimorean and proud of my city and proud of my background. And that really came from my parents generally, but my mother specifically.
How do you miss her? What are the ways that you find yourself missing her?
Well, firstly, she was an amazing cook. I'm already fat, so I'd be like 800 pounds if she was still alive. I have to say that the last 14 years of my mother's life, she progressed with dementia, and so we had even a different kind of relationship where I became the guardian. And, you know, into her 70s, she was still my mom, with a great sage and a support. I miss those things that moms do, the look that they give you when they're happy for you and pissed with you. I miss being able to take her with me and her be proud of me and also still be amazed by things. You know, I wish that I could have taken her to the new African American Museum in Washington, D.C.
Oh, I bet.
And just wandered with her, and she would have told me, I did that. I know who that is. We did that. You know, I miss those kind of real connections in every day. But I tell you, she's still here. I yell mom sometimes in the house, and I know that, once again, I'm, you know, from the South, so I know that she's guarding me in this house and in this city and in this world. And I tell everybody that she's in Baltimore heaven right now looking down at me.
Baltimore heaven indeed. She passed away in 2011, right?
Yeah.
Boy, it seems like just yesterday we were at the wake for her. Boy, it seems like a heartbeat in a way, but I'm sure it's an eternity for you as well. How did you pick the pieces, both of yours and of your mom's, to be in this show? And what pieces of your mom's do you make sure that you have with you in the house?
Well, I did not choose my mother's works or my works. They were done by, the work was chosen by the curator from the BMA because they come from their collection. I'm very proud that they have collected my mother's work.
Yeah.
And one of her really exceptional quilts is a topographical view of a plantation. And she used to tell us that, you know, this is really a map that slaves would use. Those rows of crops and cotton are a map, and they figure out how to run away from the plantation by this. And people would, you know, because she was a rascal, oh, yes, Mother Scott. And then years later, they're been research that says this was true, that so they have that plantation quilt, and it's pretty wonderful. And Amy Raich, who you know is the executive director at Goya Contemporary, chose the works of mine as well as with Cecilia, the curator at the BMA. And I, you know, I chimed in, but I actually leave that kind of work to them.
Mm-hmm.
I did do one piece. I'll do a connection for you there. Last year, I had the largest exhibition of my six-my retrospective at the BMA in 2000 in New Jersey at an art park called Grounds for Sculpture. And it was all called Harriet Tubman and Other Truths. And there was a section, an installation that I called a boudoir, but it really would be called a cabinet or a bedroom kind of space when Harriet Tubman was alive. And Harriet Tubman and my mom, I think of them as being cousins or sisters because of what superheroes they were. They were short, dark skin, very powerful women. And I made a quilt out of beads for that area. And that quilt is going to be in this exhibition, as well as it spills out of a trunk. And I also allow people to help me make this quilt, too, whether they wanted to or not. By the end, when we were installing it, there were pieces that still had to be done. Lowry Sims, who is this, you know, internationally acclaimed curator, was yelling at me about why she had to do it. And I said, because you must, and it's just that simple.
It is sometimes just that simple, isn't it?
Sometimes there's no reason to discuss this beyond yes, Joy.
And there's a particular cachet, I guess, about a show that hangs in a museum, you know? And the what in terms of the experience of the work of your mother and of you, of yours, what is the particular capacity of being in the museum, seeing this work and experiencing it, as opposed to a private collector's home or your own home or some other space?
Well, I know that it's a validation. It means that those people who are or believe that they are the experts in this, because I don't know who's more of an expert than the person who made it.
Yeah.
A good curator, a good collector talks to you and learns, and then they become, you know, have bona fides about what something is. But it's that kind of validation that says that those people in the know understand and respect the quality and the aesthetics of your work. It is, for African Americans, a kind of validation that says, you see, you are saying that my work has the same quality that your work has. And that, whether that's valid or not, has been a problem for a very long time. And African-American men and women right now are riding a great roller coaster of respect in the art world, because the work is being looked at and seen as something that is, it has real quality, or is as equal as everything else.
Yeah,
now,
yeah.
For me, it's not only that it's a validation, but it is an arena where a lot more people will see it, and they will see it in a context. So the idea that a school kid will be able to come and see the African collection, the Indian collection, whatever contemporary work is going on, the Maryland collection, and also see my work and my mother's work, means that they have a true arena, a context for knowing the import of the work and the import of art in general.
You know, coming up a little later on the show today, I'm going to talk to some folks who are running the Single Carrot Theater, and they're struggling, or they're not, I shouldn't say struggling, but they're addressing ways to become relevant and resonant with the community. People, you know, I was in the arts for the longest time. You and I did stuff together performing.
Thank you for saying performing, because people don't know. You have to clean that stuff up.
That's exactly right. But look, let me tell you, people want to start rumors about me and you, Joyce. I'm all in.
Great.
I'm all in. But you know, the whole notion of making art relevant for the current universe, the current world. You talk about this beautiful piece, Plantation, by your mom, and the other quilts that were used as maps for the Underground Railroad and as aids to folks who were escaping. In terms of making the kind of work that you are continuing to make, do you ever worry about, you know, its so-called relevance to what's happening in the current zeitgeist?
Okay, I'm going to do that a circular answer. The first answer to that is hell no, I do not. And I'm going to go back and say, I just mentioned Single Carrot Theater in another interview because of who I believe they are. But I don't think I have to make art relevant, or my art relevant, or anybody else's art relevant, because it is relevant in and of itself. It is helping people to understand its relevance. That's what I think the key is, because everything that we do is art. The shoes you wear, the utensils, that your clothing, the thing you sit on, the house you entered, this is all designed and created by a creative entity, by an artist of some form. So people have to realize that that is what art is. I don't worry because I told you earlier that my mom told me to be that authentic, real voice. So the artwork that I make comes specifically from me. I got really aggressive for a second, didn't I? That artwork comes truly from me.
And you're allowed.
So, yeah, it is relevant. Now, whether people dig it or understand, I just went back to hippie days, they dig in it and everything, whether they understand the prowess and the importance of what I believe I have to say, well, there's 7 billion people in the world. Somebody's going to. And I don't even know if it's, I think it's actually cool if everybody doesn't, because that helps to spur the conversation about it. I understand, I think there need to find relevancy because of who and what they are. You know, being a small theater company and creating work that needs outreach is a problem. They have different problems than I have. I mean, they're paying for a theater and they're doing a theater company. I, in and of myself, I'm the business, I'm the theater company, I'm the performance and the visual artist, and everything like flows from me.
Yeah.
And I've learned throughout my life how to make a dollar.
You have. A MacArthur grant. A MacArthur grant doesn't hurt, too, and that's really great. It's so beautifully and richly deserved, and, you know, we're all proud of you, Joyce. You've just, you have made such beautiful work for so many people, and you've brought such great pride to our city. So thanks. It's always great to talk to you. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. May I end by saying something?
Yes.
Because I don't know how many minutes you have, but I have to say this. I am, when I talk about being a herald or a siren or a speaker from Baltimore, I mean it. I understand that we're a city in the throes of what I consider to be change. And it's a bumpy, bumpy evolution and change. And I want to be there for it. And the reason why I have had the ability to be a success is because of not only my family and friends, but the support of educators and just everybody else, and just feeling alive and happy and comfortable in my city. So I thank Baltimore as well, because, you know, you made Joycey Joyce and everything.
Well, we thank you. Joyce Scott, she is the MacArthur Award-winning Baltimore artist whose work is paired with the work of her mother, Elizabeth Scott, in an exhibition that's just opened at the Baltimore Museum of Art. It's called Hitching Their Dreams to Untamed Stars. It's at the BMA until December 1st. You can also see a different, separate, concurrent exhibition of these two great artists, Joyce Scott and Elizabeth Talford Scott, called Reality Times 2 at the Goya Contemporary Gallery. That'll be there until July 16th. So two chances to see the work of Joyce and Elizabeth Scott at the Goya Contemporary and at the Baltimore Museum of Art. We'll have links on our website, wypr.org/midday. Thank you again, Joyce. Much appreciated.
Thank you.
It's Midday on the Arts. We're going to take a quick break, and when we return, a conversation with the members of the Single Carrot Theater about the new path that they are forging in the Baltimore theater scene. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.